Are you seeking more depth, more meaning, and a place to connect from the heart with fellow coaches and leaders? Then this is the right place. At Awaken Coach Institute, we create community where you can truly belong and show up as your whole self. Welcome to another episode on the Awaken Voices podcast. Today we have Alice Reeves sharing about her experience as a neurodivergent business owner who has built up several businesses successfully. And what's really inspiring about Alice is that she really found her own strategies that work for her brain and really allow her to thrive in the business space. And yeah, maybe you can find some little inspiration and just know that you're not alone, that building up a business can feel quite overwhelming because it's a lot. And so if you have any further questions that come up while listening to this episode, you're happily invited to join our business blockbusters where Alice helps us get unstuck. And this will happen the next time on June 23rd. You can find more infos, as always, in the show notes. So enjoy this episode.
Hello, Alice.
Hi.
Good to see your face. It's been ages since we've gotten a good catch up.
Absolutely. Time just seems to go faster and faster and faster with every passing year at the moment.
Well, why don't we have our good catch up live in front of a podcasting audience?
Why not?
Why not? I would just love to hear your perspective as an Awaken grad and someone who's been a business owner for, I think, like 8 years now.
Yeah, 8 years.
8 years. What it's like to be a spicy in general person like me. I'm right there with you. Just exploring all the joys, because that's one of your words. And challenges of being a neurodivergent entrepreneur.
Well, I feel like I'd probably fill the episode just by answering that question.
Just talk really fast. Honest.
Yeah, exactly. but basically, you know, like so many neurodivergent people, my experience of being employed was that I would job hop kind of every 18 months to 2 years. 2 years was the longest that I had ever stayed in the job. And what would happen is I'd reach a point where I'd go into the organization, I'd do whatever I was brought in to do, overhaul the department, start a new department, build a new team. You know, I always seem to attract jobs where there was that extra layer of challenge, like something needed to be done. But then when
new,
it was done,
different, change
new,
something.
Different, absolutely. And then I'd reach a point where I'd kind of done what the objective was, and then I just like had to run the thing. And for me, I would then immediately kind of get bored, and I'd be like looking in the business, like, where's the next challenge? Where's the next challenge? And there wasn't one. And so, you know, I think that was like the main element from a perspective of fulfillment, is that, you know, this was before I was diagnosed with ADHD, but I've always had a brain that has hopped from like the next challenge to the next challenge to the next challenge, and always wanting that kind of novelty of building something.
And can I just say, not to interrupt, but like it sounds so exciting and fun and also so exhausting.
Yeah.
Is that how you experience?
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, I would put my heart and soul into absolutely everything. And so I would rise up the ranks quite quickly because people realized that, you know, oh, this is someone who comes in and like she gets shit done, like amazing. But then I would kind of find myself, you know, either in a leadership position where I then had zero support, you know, a neurodivergent person managing a bunch of neurotypicals. You know, I've been self-employed since I was 30. So this was sort of in my late 20s. And then, you know, tensions would start to come in because I realized that even though I had senior manager or associate director in my title, I didn't actually have the autonomy to work in the way that I wanted because I was still part of a bigger organization. And not knowing I was neurodivergent at the time, I was sort of left with this, well, what's wrong with me? Like, why can't I just... Yeah. Why can't I just do what everyone?
Yeah. Fit in.
Yeah. Why do I have to say that? Why do I have to do that? Why do I have to have a problem with this? Why can't I just? And so then I kind of realized that the only way to really get out of that space and be able to kind of follow my ideas and have my role grow at my own pace was to be my own boss, essentially. And I think,
well, and even it strikes me that you've made being your own boss your own, and yes, really dramatically, because I'm my own boss too, but I feel like I still am in this, like, I need to follow the rules mentality. Mm. Like, there are the systems out there. We're part of the International Coaching Federation. We need to teach by their competencies, follow their exam, that kind of stuff. And you just strike me as someone who's going to be like, we won't do obscene gestures. We'll use this finger. You're just kind of like, okay, you're in the marketing world.
Yeah.
But my sense from you is there's even part of like, screw it. I don't want to... I'm just going to do my own thing, regardless of what other people say.
Yeah. And I think for the first few years, I was definitely in that mindset of there is a way to do this. There is a way I have seen marketing agencies built. There is a way that I, you know, have to be, that I have to show up. I was still very much stuck in like the 9-to-5 conditioning. And so what happened
Which
in my first...
does not work, I imagine.
Does not work. And so what happened in my first kind of 5 years really of self-employment is I was still trying to make myself fit into this mold of what I thought a business owner should be. And I was being way harder on myself than any boss had ever been on me. And you know, there were all the great stuff that went with self-employment, like being able to choose what I worked on when I worked, you know, end contracts with clients that weren't working, you know, kind of take days off when I wanted, broadly set my own schedule. But I was still very much stuck in that conditioning of like, you've got to show up every day, you've got to work your 8 hours, you got, you know, all that stuff.
And just meeting benchmarks and things too, instead of like, wait, what do I want? What are my benchmarks?
Completely.
What makes me happy?
And working with the external pressures of clients who were also quite corporate as well. And then, you know, what happened as everything does, you know, when you keep your lid on a pressure cooker, eventually it explodes. Like I hit a period of really poor mental health in 2021, you know, like a lot of people did after the pandemic. But that is then what led to my ADHD diagnosis. And so... Mm-hmm. At that point, I did a lot of learning, you know, deep dive, hyper focus, learn everything I needed to know about ADHD, how my brain worked. And that led me to realize that I actually had to leave the business that I had built because it just wasn't ever going to work for me. And I could see so clearly that I, armed with this new knowledge that I had about my brain, like I didn't have to kind of fumble around trying to figure out what I needed anymore. I knew what I needed and I had to go out and build that for myself.
And that's so courageous, man. Leaving something that you built, I would guess, is much harder than leaving a corporate job that someone else built.
Oh yeah. It's like leaving a relationship. You know, I had a business partner. We had to like break up and have a business divorce. And it was just as emotional as you know, a romantic relationship breaking up. Our lives had become intertwined over the course of 5 years and we had to separate that. but there reaches a point where, you know, you realize that you can't keep going at something where you are having to sacrifice your own happiness every single day. Like, there has to come a point where you think, what I need and what I want is not going to happen here, and no one else is going to come and give it to me. I have to go out and find it for myself.
Well, and it strikes me that's one of the beauties of the neurodivergent way of being. At least it is for me. Like, when I'm super happy and excited about doing something, I can really, really dive in and be, I'm so happy. Like, it's very intense. Yeah. And then as soon as I get bored, it gets scary quickly, because I'm like, I must get out of here. I must escape. And it really affects my mood, especially in the wintertime. So I can just imagine, like, if you're not excited and not interested and it's having a negative effect, it doesn't have kind of just a little dip. It's, at least for me, it can be a pretty deep dip.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, eventually, you know, you can have all the kind of coaching and therapy and support out there, but ultimately, if you don't make the big decisions that are the ones that are right for you, you know, all you're doing is creating these layers of coping mechanisms on a situation that isn't working.
Well, and it strikes me that making the right decision involves so much self tenderness, because, like, the way we are wired can be really hard to accept. And it's been told that it's the wrong way to be, that we should just be like steady, even keel people, go along every day at the same pace. And that's not the way our bodies and minds work. And so then, you know, people might be like, you're so inconsistent, or can I trust you, or this and that. But when you know your body rhythms and you trust yourself that, you know what, I will hibernate in the winter and I will become a daffodil in the spring, that is not wrong. It's the way that much of nature is wired to be, including this body, and being really caring and not judgy about it.
Yeah.
What's that been like for you?
Yeah, I think it's been, you know, I've always been a kind of go person, and you know, lived my life in these cycles of burnout where I will, like, go hard at whatever I'm doing and then get really overwhelmed and then have to step back and take some time out. And it's difficult to put the brakes on sometimes when I have a brain that moves so quickly. And so much of kind of learning about my own neurodivergence is kind of learning that I don't always have that self-awareness to understand what my body needs. Yeah. You know, it's like I'm driving a car and all the warning lights are on. And I'm like, well, the car's still going. Like, I'm just going to get, you know, it hasn't stopped yet. I'm just going to keep going. And then eventually the car just breaks down. And, like, that's how I lived my life.
I'll
and
then all of a sudden, you know,
whereas if I just, like, done the maintenance every time a warning light came on and gone, oh, well, I need a bit more oil here, or that needs fixing, I'm not going to burn out. But if I just ignore all the warning signs and keep driving until the car literally can't go anymore, like, that is how I lived my life.
I used to call it, like, my worm. You know how if you see a worm moving, they stretch out really, really long and thin, and then they kind of bunch up, and then they move along by stretching out, and then they bunch up again. And I'm like, am I in my stretching out phase? And at what point does the worm just kind of snap in half and be like, I guess I'm two worms now, drying out in the sun over here.
But again, so much of my own journey has been about really getting into, you know, out of my head, into my body, building that conscious awareness of what is going on, and understanding what those warning signs are that I need to take a break or I need to take a day off. And knowing that if I wake up in the morning and, like, my brain and my emotions and my body are not playing ball, to just go, you know what, I'm not going to force myself to go up and sit at my desk and concentrate. You know, it's been about understanding what boundaries I need to put in place. And, you know, now, like, one of the biggest changes I made, two biggest changes I made, and they sound so small, but, you know, I know that my brain likes to sit down, look at my diary for the week on a Monday, and know exactly what I have to achieve by Friday and not want any surprises dropping in. So I now have a cutoff in my diary where if people have not booked a meeting for the following week by 5 p.m. on a Friday, they can't speak to me next week. They have to wait for the week after. And also, I now do not allow people to book calls on a Monday or Friday.
Yeah.
So I only have calls in the middle of the week. I've set my diary to limit to like 3 calls a day. And they have to be booked, you know, at least the week before. And just having those boundaries in place has like freed up so much of my mental space. They've made my week so much more relaxed. And like, guess how many people have complained about not being able to find a slot in my diary? Literally zero. And I've been doing this for 6 months now.
Right. I know. I worked with my business coach a few years ago and I was working 6 days a week. Like most weeks, there were always just calls happening. And it took me almost a year, but it went quicker than I thought. We had given me 2 years to do it, but I went down to working 3.5 days. And so, yeah, Friday mornings are always off. Monday is always off. Saturday and Sundays, like I can't tell you how many weekends I used to work with events and workshops and this and that. And now it's like, nope, Spain once a year. Other than that, you can call me Tuesday to Thursday, period.
And I, you know, I sometimes work on a weekend, but I call it my admin Sunday. And I literally, it's a couple of hours on a Sunday afternoon where I sit down with a coffee and I just look through what I have to do for the week. And I might do just some little tasks, like little easy tasks that I can get off my plate so that when I sit down at my desk ready for the week, when the world wakes up and comes back to work on a Monday and my inbox starts, like I've got rid of as much as I can that just feels easy.
My Sundays are a little bit like that, but it's more like I'll be outside somewhere biking. Usually I'm biking on Sunday. And when I'm outside, my brain will start going off on all these little things. And then I just have to write it down. So I'll rush home and then I'll just hole myself up in here with a big blanket. And it'll be like, I have no idea about time. It could be 5 hours and I'll come out with like, oh, I just wrote a new course or I wrote 5 newsletters and I have no idea when it's going to hit, but it's usually when I'm not expecting it. I've been out just enjoying, relaxing, and then shoop, the download comes and it needs to get out on paper.
And this
and it doesn't happen during the week very much. Like if I have calls and things or just a little bit or I'm kind of in work mode, then my writing brain doesn't turn on.
But this is such an important point about self-employment and entrepreneurship. You know, we're so conditioned that there is that 9-to-5 mentality. And, you know, very few people's brain, I think, whether you're neurodivergent or neurotypical, will be creative and productive within whatever confined set of hours you decide it's going to be productive and creative within. And so the whole, like, the whole concept of a 9-to-5, like the more you think about it is ridiculous. And you know, I definitely know that people would like judge me for working at weekends and go, oh, you're working on a Sunday. And I'm like, yeah, but I just randomly took Wednesday off because I didn't want to work, you know, because my brain wasn't feeling it or, you know, inspiration strikes and I want to write it down. But people are so conditioned within that, like, well, these are the hours for work and these are the hours for leisure.
And sorry, I didn't take a shower on Wednesday, so I didn't get any inspiration.
And if you're, you know, and if you're working in the leisure hours, then, oh, you're overworking yourself. And it's like, no, like some days I will work 9-to-5. If I've got calls and those are the hours that people like to work, I will, you know, work within those hours. But some days I'll work 11-till-3 because that's all I've got. Some days I'll wake up at 7 in the morning with this rush of inspiration, be at my desk and still be working at 8 o'clock at night. You know, some days I'll do nothing all day, start work at 3 p.m. and work through till 10 p.m. You know, it's but it is about, like, once you get in tune with, like, your body and your brain and what it needs, you know, I know there is absolutely no point in trying to force myself to do something if my brain is not feeling ready to do it.
And that's the key to boundaries, isn't it? It's really a moment by moment check-in. It's not about rigid rules. It's that what do I want and need in this moment?
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things that you put in place on the Awaken team, when you were helping us do all of our, get everything organized and SOPs written about everything under the sun. But in the team check-ins, you just had these little, like, just tell us how you're doing. You don't necessarily have to do your work that day, but just tell us. And so we still have that system every morning. The four of us we've got a little red, yellow, or green emoji. And that's like, you can either write me and give me jobs to do today or not today, wait till tomorrow. And it's all fine. And some of us work at 3 a.m. Others work at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
10 a.m.
Yeah.
It's a very loving, accepting, warm way to be on a team. And it's so different. I don't think most people have experienced, like, oh, you mean you're just allowed to say today's a nope day?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we're so conditioned by the corporate world, you know, to, particularly me, like, coming from the agency world, you go in, you have your, like, stand up at 9 a.m., you tell everyone how productive you're going to be, you say who's going to have what by the end of the day. And like, I, in every team that I've run, I have, you know, experienced that kind of, like, check-in, or I've put that check-in in place. And because I think it's just so important to have that open channel of communication and be able to support each other. You know, when you work with someone, you see them more than you see most other people in your life. That relationship, that communication is so, so important. And I think, you know, not only, I mean, there's different levels to the check-ins, right? It can work for so many, it can work on so many levels. It can work on an accountability level where you're checking in and you're saying to your team, look, this is what I need to get done today. This is what I'm going to get done. You're putting it out there. You're holding yourself accountable. Again, really important for a lot of neurodivergent people. You know, in the community that I run, we have an accountability thread every week. We have two body doubling sessions every week because that external accountability is really important. There's also, you know, the opportunity to ask for help. You know, within that check-in, I always say, like, it's not just about what you're working on. It's about where you're stuck. Like, what do you need from the team today to be able to do what it is you want to do? You know, you're not on your own. You're not just this productivity machine that's a cog in a wheel. We are an ecosystem. We are a community. We are a mini community, and we are all here to help each other. So it's also an opportunity to ask for help, and also an opportunity to, like you say, assert your boundaries and say, look, like, folks, it's not happening for me today. I'm just need to take some time out. Then the whole team knows, well, I'm not going to chase that person for that thing because they've come in and they've told me that that's not what they need today. So it works on so many levels, and people can use that check-in system for whatever it is they need. It's just to have that kind of touch point, especially with so many teams working remotely. Like my team at the moment, like, I'm running two businesses. One, like, we work sometimes together in an office. We sometimes work separately. In my other business, we've got, you know, three of us kind of down south in the UK, one up north of London, one out towards Wales. You know, so we are working asynchronously and remotely every day because it's not feasible for us to meet up and get together as a team. So that's
where
you're
blowing
those
my mind.
Things...
I'm like, okay, one business is already overwhelming for me. You're like, why don't I just have four businesses?
I've like never had less than like two businesses or like a business and a project because I like some days I'm like, I want to do something, but I don't want to do that one. I'm going to do that one.
So fun. Well, and I hear you really leveraging your strengths. Like, what do you want to say about how do you just work at your best if it's not what the usual world would say?
I think so much of it is about self-awareness. And, you know, I speak to so many neurodivergent people and who, like, say the same thing. Like, you know, diagnosis is great. It's not like it's not a magic bullet. Like it doesn't suddenly mean that, oh, I know exactly what I want. Like you have, that's just the beginning. You know, once you realize either through medical diagnosis or through self-diagnosis, which is totally valid, like particularly here in the UK where wait times for diagnosis can be like 5-10 years. But once you start doing the research and you start trying stuff, like I always say to people, if you think you have ADHD, if you think you're autistic, just structure your life like you are, because your life will probably get easier for it. You know, if you do all this reading and you think, oh, right, people with ADHD do really well with body doubling, you know, put that in your life. Like, you know, so I run a business community for neurodivergent entrepreneurs. We have 2 body doubling sessions every week where all our members from all over the world, we just get on a call and we just work together. And that gives me the support structure I need to like declare at the start of the session, right, I'm going to do this thing that I've been putting off. And then I'm like, right, I've got an hour and a half in this session and it is going to be done by the time I've done this. You know, I have a timer. If there's a task I really don't want to do, I set my timer to like 15 minutes and I race the timer to get it done. So, you know, those things for me, that accountability, that external pressure is so important. So working for myself where I haven't got a boss going, this is the deadline, this is the deadline. Like I have to put that external pressure on myself somehow in order to motivate me.
I do that with Kiara, my daughter. the two of us on Thursdays have our mother-daughter call and it's scheduled for an hour, but we both go into time warp. The way our brains. And so like we get on the call at 3:00 and then sometimes it's like 6 p.m. and we're like, we're still just both quietly working. And occasionally we'll look up and say something or get distracted or whatever. But it could be like 3 hours later that we're like, I'm getting hungry. Are you hungry? Oh yeah. I forgot to notice if I was hungry. Good point. Bye.
Yeah. And again, like, you know, that's self-awareness about yourself, right? Like, you know, it's not good to like sit and focus for 3 hours without peeing, eating and drinking. So again, like
our peeing song. We have
the best thing ever.
Well, sometimes in the middle of our call, because I'm so bad, my interoception, just the way noticing what it's like inside my body has traditionally been really bad. And I'm really working on it, but knowing when I have to pee is one of my least, it just doesn't show up until it's too late. And so we have our I have to pee song because it's sometime during our mother-daughter call. I'm like, be right back. And Kiara starts singing because I leave my headphones on, I mute myself, and then I leave, and she starts singing. I have to be like a banshee right now. She still sings away the whole time I'm gone. So ridiculous. Like, okay, my body forgot to tell me again, but there you go.
Yeah, and I have my timer and I set it. If I think I'm in danger of hyper-focusing, I set this for the hour and then it goes off and it breaks my state. And so I can go, oh, right, have a drink. Get up, have a stretch, go to the loo. Don't sit like hunched over your computer like a gremlin for like 3 hours and then realize you can't actually move your back.
My husband has a whole app and it's like it's just on all the time. So sometimes he'll just be like sitting on the couch or whatever, and all of a sudden his phone is like, time for a stretch. Like, really?
See, because
every
I have
14
demand.
Minutes.
Because I have demand avoidance, that would just annoy me. I'd be like, no.
Right. Shut up, phone. You're not the boss of me.
Exactly. Exactly. But again, it's so important to understand like what we need. Yeah. And you know, and like, yes, it's great being self-employed. You know, like I think you mentioned in your question, like because the world doesn't always like respond to what you need, like, and it's easy to think like being self-employed that you can call all the shots, but you know, there's still going to be opportunities where you're going to need to like set boundaries with clients. There's going to be people judging you on their standards that you're going to have to say, actually, that's not right for me, thank you, or that's not aligned with my values, or that's not aligned with what I need. You know, I set boundaries with clients a lot, saying like, I don't do calls before this certain time in the morning, or I don't have calls on Fridays, or, you know, I need to like if you send me a written brief and I have questions, like, I do need the opportunity to get on a call with you to actually ask the questions that I need to ask. And so just that, when you build that self-awareness, you can advocate for your needs, which is great. But then it's about finding that strength to, in the face of like, oh, why do you need that, to really stand firm in your boundaries and say, no, I do need this. And I don't actually have to justify it to you of why I need it. This is just what I need to work at my best, for our working relationship to be best, to deliver work that I know is going to be the best of my ability. This is what I need.
Yeah. And I always loved that about working with you. There was this real strong sense of community, because you're talking about kind of self-care and self-awareness and knowing, like, do I need to stretch? Do I need to pee? Do I need to take a break? Do I need to just let myself be sick today? Whatever it is. And we also need that community support, I love about you. You seem like you're just a genius at, like, let me collect people who get each other and who can just be honest. Like, how does that happen for you in your business life too?
I mean, community has always been something that I have been so aware that I needed. And, you know, it started really because my first ever, like, proper job where I had any level of responsibility was as the events manager for the Chamber of Commerce in my city. And so my job was to organize business events that would bring business owners together. You know, I was about 24 at the time. That's when I decided I'm going to run my own business one day. And so I saw firsthand how important it was as a business owner to be surrounded by people who got it. You know, we'd get speakers in to come and talk about their business journey. I'd see the responses in the room of people hearing other people's challenges and just that look on their face of like, oh God, thank God I'm not the only one. Right. You know, I saw how they would go up to speakers at the end and say, thank you. Like, thank you for sharing that. Or, you know, and I would see the problems they would come to us with and how it was our job to connect and, you know, make those connections with people. And so no matter what I've been doing in my business, I've always had some kind of community on the side. You know, when I was running half marathons, I was part of a local women's running community and we met together twice a week. We'd go on runs together, you know, because I was like, if I'm going to do this, I can't do it on my own. And that has always been my, you know, in some ways I'm very hyper independent. I can be quite like, I have perfectionist and I have like controlling tendencies, but I've never been a person who has thought I have to do stuff on my own. I've always sought out that community. I've always built community around me, whether I'm running half marathons or learning a new skill or building a business. I've always put those support structures around me. And, you know, now I run my own communities, but I'm also part of two other communities where I'm not in a leadership role. Because there is a difference.
Like, say that again. There is a huge difference. Yeah.
So I lead two communities. I lead a women in business local women in business meetup group, and I run a online kind of, you know, wherever you are in the world community for neurodivergent business owners. And my role in that community is the leader of that community. And it's like, it's, you know, it's fine for me to be vulnerable. It's fine for me to share. It's fine for me to open up. It's fine for me to share my struggles. But I also have to be mindful that while they are my communities, I am also the leader of those communities. And it is my job to hold the space, to look after members, to keep those structures in place with my team. You know, I'm not doing it on my own. I'm not doing either community on my own. I have co-founders, but as in a leadership role, you know, there is a certain way to be in that community. So I make sure that I am part of two other communities where I am not in that leadership role. And when I need help, I find it more comfortable to step into those communities where I am not the leader, to be the person who is asking for help.
Absolutely. And I think
when you are a leader,
I just can't say enough about that. Yeah, it's so important. And yeah. I'm very impressed that you learned it so young. I sound like your grandma. But I mean, for me, it wasn't until maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Like, I've always been about building community. Like, I studied group dynamics in university, and I've been about creating communities as long as I can remember. And it wasn't until 2019 I had started a group called the Beloved Community based on Martin Luther King Jr.'s 10 principles of the Beloved Community. And I was leading these groups. And then at one point, there were 5 women in this one group. And they said, we don't want to continue this. And I was heartbroken. But they said, no, we want to continue, but we want you to be one of us. Like, you sometimes are slightly vulnerable, but we just want the whole you. Yeah. Would you agree? It took me about 6 months to decide if I wanted that to be my people.
Yeah.
And we text every day. We meet up at least once a month. I'm flying to Doha in 3 weeks to meet a couple of the women in that group. And they are like such a solid force for me. Mm. And then I've been creating these groups of business owners just with other women who own businesses about the same size as Awaken, because it's, like you said, it's so helpful to be able to show up and be like,
yeah,
what the hell? Facebook ads do not work. These, like, what's going on? Or like, I can't figure out how to do this. And other people are like, I know, that's so hard. And then you don't feel like such a complete imbecile, because you're not going to get it from looking at LinkedIn where everybody's like 6-figure, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. Was that 6 figures for your salary, or was that 6 figures in revenue? Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, yeah.
With all these, you know, measures of success, making yourself look good. Yeah. But like, what's really going on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I talk about that a lot. And I think, you know, it can be so easy to be sucked into all of that and think that you are a complete failure. But like, I've always been so transparent about like my earnings, my turnovers, my profits. Like, I've always been really open with people because I don't want to be pulling that smoke and mirrors stuff that is going to make other people feel bad. And I think that there are so many people who, you know, basically if you see someone spouting about how much money they've made, they're trying to sell you something. That's literally, I've never seen anyone.
No, right. Yes.
Boasting about having 6 or 7 figures, who is not trying to sell you some program, some strategy, some structure that they are going to take all your money and show you how to do it. And I'm always like, well, guess what? It's not going to work for you, because it worked for them and they're not you.
Yeah. It's like your uniqueness is your strength, and your way of doing things is your strength.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what makes you feel good in your life, like how much money feels like, oh, this covers my bills and I have enough to go on vacation or, you know, whatever it is, versus I should be making X, whatever, pounds, dollars, euros.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's what somebody says.
Yeah. And I just think if you're making the equivalent of whatever salary you would need to live on through running your own business, like, that's fine. Not everyone needs to build a business that they want to sell or exit from or scale or hire people. Like, some people just want to run a business that ticks over, that they just take the same amount of money from every month and live their life. And that doesn't make them less successful or inferior as a business owner or entrepreneur. It just means that they're living in alignment with their values.
Yeah. Yeah. I just went to a summit a couple weeks ago and it was almost all men, which drove me nuts. Thankfully, they were mostly fat and bald, so it made it a little easier. Nothing against overweight people such as myself. But man, it was driving me nuts how they just all had such a like overconfidence and expertise about a life that I don't really have any interest in in living, really.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? It's I'm at the moment I'm reading I'm reading Let Them by Mel Robbins. I don't know if you heard of it. It's all, and I've just finished the chapter where she talks about comparison and like comparing ourselves to others and making ourselves feel bad. And she's like, all you know, she said, what we do is we compare ourselves up to people who we think are doing better than them. We never compare ourselves down to people where we have more.
Like 2 years into Awaken, I remember just being like, I am such a crap business owner. I'm the stupidest person on the planet because I was looking at the coach training school that I had gone to.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they're 27 years old. They didn't start with thousands of people going through their program, nor do I want thousands of people going through my program.
No.
I love our intimate community spaces together.
And Mel Robbins is like, she says, pay attention to like when you're comparing yourself to someone, like what is that telling you? Like, is it that you're looking at someone and you're feeling this like spark of jealousy or envy, which is great because if you feel that, it shows you what you want.
Yep.
So use that comparison, like use that envy, use that jealousy to go, actually, that is what I want for myself and turn it into that motivation. But then also it's about saying, am I comparing myself to this person? Because there's some conditioning in my head that says this is what I should want when I don't actually want it.
Exactly. Like I do not enjoy managing people. I'm always really happy when someone else like you, or now there's Emma in our team, she can make sure everybody's doing their tasks. I do not want to do that. And I'm willing to give up a good chunk of my salary to have someone else do it for me.
Yeah.
But that being said, I don't want to have this giant team. Like I don't want 15 employees. That's like, ooh, that would feel like such heavy pressure that I've got to make salaries every month for however many. And it's got to get bigger and bigger and we have to get more and more people involved.
Yeah.
And my business coach a few years ago showed me a chart that's like seared into my mind now. And it was like, okay, here's a woman who's making $2 million in revenues every year and taking home 98K for herself because she's got all these teams and systems and she's working like a mad woman. And then here's the simplified, making 96,000 for herself with an extra 30% for a VA.
Yep.
Simple life, works half as much.
Yep. I've written a talk that I've given a couple of times, which is about that. And I literally say, in the most successful year of my small agency, we turned over £250,000 and I took home about 50K. Like that's what I pocketed after tax was about 50K. The rest went on the outsourcing, the team. And then the year after I left that business, I turned over about 80K and I took home 50K.
Right? Yeah.
And so in real terms, money in my pocket, money to spend, my salary, it was the same. But the difference in stress levels was huge. Like and actually the impact on me personally and my financial situation was the same. So again, we can get swept up in these numbers. And like you said earlier, people say six figures, seven figures, da, da, da. But no one kind of breaks it down and goes, well, this was turnover, this was profit, this was gross profit, this was net profit, this was what I paid myself, this is what I left in the business. And so, you know, that smoke and mirror, like basically anytime I see a social media post talking about it, I'm like, scroll on.
Scrolling on is a leverage of strength. Yes.
I don't care. I'm not motivated by money.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, what else would be really important? I know you've just got stories and stories and stories because you've been a businesswoman and exploring neurodiversity and helping so many other people understand their bodies and minds and what makes them joyful.
Yeah.
What else would be really important for us to touch on today?
So I think maybe my motivation for like doing, for training as a coach, I think as well. So I've worked basically for years as a business consultant, you know, getting into it through marketing, but then gradually the skills I picked up through entrepreneurship kind of broadening my marketing background into more of a kind of cohesive like business processes, anything small business related. And what I kept finding was that I was able to give all of this like practical advice, strategy, which was great. And as I learned more about my neurodivergence, I was able to help neurodivergent business owners with, but then what would happen, you know, throughout my whole career really as a consultant, is I'd give people these strategies and then they'd get blocked and they'd go away and they wouldn't implement them. And then they'd come back to me 6 months later asking for more help.
Right.
And so I started to realize that what was going on, it wasn't about them not having the skills or knowledge. It was about them being blocked by something that was on an emotional level or a belief level or an identity level. And I didn't have the skills to help them through that. And so I launched a business called Joyfully Different, which is all about consulting, coaching, and community for neurodivergent business owners. So that's what I run. We have an online learning hub and a support community for neurodivergent business owners. I think that's kind of what led us to really to get talking, was my launching that community. But I and then within that I'm offering one-to-one coaching and consulting. But I realized that if I was going to really help people in a holistic way, the consulting for me just was never going to be enough. So my motivation for doing the coaching training was not necessarily to like become a coach, like a pure coach, but to be able to weave the coaching skills through my consulting, you know, so
I'm so glad you're saying that, because it's even in our FAQs on the Awaken website. It's like, do I need to become a coach because I took a coach training? Because I think when I took my first coach training back in 2009, I kind of looked down with disdain on people who were just taking it as learning and not planning to, you know, become a coach. Mm. And now I have so much appreciation and really invite people to the community who are just like you. They're like, I don't necessarily want to start a coaching business,
yeah,
but I sure use the skills every day because so helpful to people.
Yeah.
And it's not the only skill set. You can use coaching skill set and consulting skill set. And I love your weaving analogy.
Yeah.
It can be all the things.
And that's what it is. Like, I was trying to separate the two and I realized actually that's not how I work. Like, what works for me is to weave it through the flow. So I might be talking with a client about a marketing strategy. You know, one example is I was working with a client and one of the elements of what I do, I know I did this with Awaken, was to write your marketing manifesto about why you want to be visible out there with your marketing. And one of the sentences is, I'm an expert in. And I get people to fill it in. And I know I've been doing this for years. And it was just like, what are you an expert in? We'd fill it and move on. But I had a client who like really got stuck on the word expert. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and because I'd done the Awaken coaching, I was able to say, I'm really noticing some stuff coming up for you around the word expert. Like what's going on for you in this? And what would have been like a marketing strategy session turned into about 20 minutes of just going into what were these associations of the word expert that were causing this blocker. And we had such a breakthrough. And now I would have just in the past, my client would have got stuck on it and I'd have been like, you are an expert because this, and this is what the definition of expert is. So actually you are an expert. So just kind of get on with it, write the stuff in the box and we'll get through the rest of the strategy. But I just felt so confident to be like, right, let's dig in here. Like, what is going on for you around this word? And it was so powerful. And so that's the difference that the coaching has made. And that wasn't even like what I would have called a coaching session, but there was coaching within it.
Yeah. That curiosity, asking about words, asking about metaphors, asking about internal blocks and emotions. Like, yeah, that's the joy of coaching. And you don't have to be a professional coach with a professional coaching business to get all the juicy benefits of knowing how to be curious and let other people find out their own resources that they have inside. Because everyone does.
And I think, you know,
neurospicy folks have so many that we don't recognize so often.
And I think I'm so, I love that so many people are wanting to coach with a neurodiverse, like with a neurodiversity specialism, because, you know, regardless of whether you've got a diagnosis, whether you relate, you know, whether you call yourself autistic, ADHD, OCD, like whatever, like we all have neurodiversity. We all have traits. We all have different things that are going to work for us. And I think that learning coaching with an awareness of that, and through Awaken, we were all neurodivergent within my cohort, which made it really, really special because we could really like dig into a lot of the traditional kind of coaching methods and say, well, this would work for this kind of person, but this might not work for this kind of person, which made the experience so, so much richer. And I think, you know, there's no, like we are all so unique. We are all so, so different in our brains and what we need and how we process stuff that I think like learning coaching through that lens, through that kind of neuro-inclusive lens is so, so important. And it's so great to see that there is a growing awareness of that within the coaching space, because before that awareness was there, I know that I spent so much money on coaching that just didn't work for me because they were following certain models or like asking me I remember being in sessions with coaches where I'm like, why are you asking me this? Like what are you like, I don't understand. What does this have to do with anything? What, you know, and I would just find myself getting more and more frustrated. Whereas with an awareness of my neurotype, you know, a coach can kind of say, okay, let me have a think about what my, like this isn't working. Let's have a think about what might work
that
for you.
Flexibility and humanity. It's so personal. I think when I first started looking at neurodiversity, when my kids were really little and we were trying to figure out like what's going on with the way they learn at school. And we were given a book called A Mind at a Time by Mel Levine. And it has stuck with me. It was a hard read. It's very academic. But he really talks about like, it doesn't matter. You can call it ADHD or autism or OCD, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter. The more specific you can be about noticing your uniqueness, the better off you'll be. Like, does your kid have trouble holding their pen and writing the letter S because it has curves? Like, that's the level of granularity that you want to know about yourself so that you can be like, you know what? I'm going to type or use block print instead because my fingers don't like to do curves. And so we all have thousands of these traits and attributes and strengths and weaknesses and challenges and all of that. And instead of being judgy that I should be able to perform at a high level on everything, we can just be like, guess what? This brain does not know what's on the calendar for tomorrow or actually this afternoon. I have no idea. I think I have some things. Don't know. That's how my brain works. Yeah. I do not know calendars. I don't know numbers. They go off floating around in weird places. Writing, so easy and fun for me. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to be the same as like someone else might say, I have ADHD. Does that mean they're a great writer? No, but it could mean they're awesome at numbers. You don't know. Yeah. We're so unique, and knowing ourselves and building on strengths is fantastic. So fun to be with you, Alice.
Great to be with you too.
Any parting shots?
Oh, just give a little plug for Joyfully Different.
Yes, that's okay. Joyfully Different is such a beautiful community that I've had the pleasure of being part of, where you get to connect with other neurodivergent business owners. And it's really like you can be a lot or a little in the chats. Yeah. And it can be about anything. You can really be yourself and get support, and you never feel awkward or weird. Or, I mean, I guess you could if you wanted to, but that would be fine.
Yeah. So. And we have a dedicated like private community platform that's not part of social media. It's its own space. Right. And within that, we run regular events for neurodivergent business owners. We have weekly resources, and we've now got a team of 11 or 12 resident experts who have expertise in different areas of business growth, who are always on hand to answer questions. So if you're neurodivergent and you're either building a business, starting a business, or you are growing a business and you know, needing support with that next challenge, or you're trying to adapt your business through the lens of a recent neurodivergent diagnosis, like that is exactly what we're here to support with.
So fun, and you're joyful about it. That's what I love about you. Like, working with you was a joy, and I love it every time we get a chance to meet up. You're so fun and so encouraging and so yourself. So
thank you
for bringing your beautiful self to the world. We love having you in the Awaken community and all you bring business building to the Awaken alumni is fantastic. We always get really good reports from your events.
Thank you so much.
Love you, my friend. Bye.